Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Oh, you need to follow us on Facebook to get that one. Oh, that was horrible. Oh, my God. Virtual high five, Chris. I mean, we're fit. That was...
to beat you to death.
Beautiful.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel. We are your guide to everything fun. We are your guys you talk to for everything cool. And we're the guys that geek out and embarrass you in public because we are just big nerds. I'm the Rock Guy of Podcasting, Charles McFall. Over here to the digital left of me is Chris Wisdom.
Whoa. First, I don't even know what to do right now. Yeah, come back to me.
All right. Now, to the NVR right of me, there is Paul Klotz.
Hi, everybody! Mr. Macy says, I like this show.
That was Elmo. Why did you say you were Mr. Meeseeks and then do Elmo?
Because it's the same damn voice.
It's not.
It's close enough. Dude, do I know who Mr. Meeseeks is? Does that not give me credit? Some kind of credit.
Everybody knows. Everybody who's worth knowing knows.
How about 50 Cent? Give me 50 Cent. 25 Cent just to smell the credit.
Give you Tree City.
God, I love that interaction between you and Botch the other day where they asked a question and you answered it honestly, but then you were like, I don't know, you got 350? And then he's like, get out of here, goddamn Loch Ness Monster. That was great.
That's because Phil gets my memes. And
that's because Phil is courting you for both of our positions over here.
Phil is worming his way into the network like an insidious. He's going to be the next worm tongue.
I was going to say, is this a game of Botched? Is that what this is?
It's going to be one of us partners in the network just sitting on the throne, and he's just going to whisper in our ears, and everybody else is just going to be skulls surrounding the dais that we're on.
I call the throne then. That seems to be the best position in that scenario.
You're too strong-willed. He'll have you murdered early.
You know what? You're probably right. You're probably right.
It's going to be Chris because he's been buttering him up for like a year. They just let Chris give them money right now.
I make him work for it. They work hard for that money.
Well, there's your opening to our show, 30-minute intro to why Botch just should be listened to right there. But you know how I like to name drop? I'm going to name drop a little bit. But I'm name dropping myself here. Charles McFall, friend of the show. Because I got selected to be a VIP/celebrity voter for the podcast awards this year. So I get to be in that group, and I'm excited. And I hope to give everybody who's non-GSTU a Quoddy Fingers fair chance.
Let's have an actual talk about this, because there are three panelists on the show, and I'm wondering if two-thirds of said panelists would indeed classify you as a friend of the show.
That's where the conversation's going.
What say you, Mr. Klotz?
He's our burden to bear.
I can hold door more than anybody else.
I made a Skyrim reference, and yeah.
I don't get Skyrim. I don't get Skyrisms.
You heard it here first, folks. Yeah. He doesn't get Skyrisms. There's no Batman movie.
The only Skyrism I get is shot in the knee. I know that. I never played it. I know that meme, but that's about it.
You know. After the show, he's gonna say, "Isn't Sky RZA from?"
Sky RZA? Isn't he in the Wu-Tang Clan, Sky RZA? He said, bring the dragons or something like that was his hit song.
Well,
enough of our shenanigans, guys. You're going to get a whole lot of this live at Dragon Con. We'll tell you more about that in the next coming weeks about the date and time. But it's going to be off the rails is what it's going to be. But this is interesting. I like that we're going to start with this because soapbox Klotz, you haven't had a soapbox in a while. You haven't had a all right. Buckle it up, boys.
I have dusted and polished and well prepared my soapbox this week. I always say that, and then like when we get into it, I only have like three things to say, and then I'm done. I got it.
Go for her.
Wonder Woman. You might recall Wonder Woman being a very important film for a lot of reasons. One, it was the first tolerable DCEU film, since Snyder Generation. More importantly, for a lot of ladies out there, young and, middle-aged and old alike, it was the first time that we got to have a female superhero be the star of the show, leading the way. It's all about her, and it's a really positive thing because the film was done well. It was good, positive representation. A lot of folks felt empowered by it, and even, a lot of us gentlemen who care about ladies feeling very empowered by such things, we were very happy that there was finally some fair representation out there. However, there was a little bit of drama coming up when the film was first coming out, because Alamo Drafthouse decided to kind of heavily advertise some female-only screenings of Wonder Woman.
And we covered that when it was announced.
Yeah. As you might expect, it caused some drama, right? Of course, there's troglodytes out there on the internet who just take every opportunity to turn everything into a big fight and everything. But there are people on kind of all sides, like saying, hey, I get what you're like, and we're going to get into our personal stances on it here in a minute, but ultimately they did them. They did these lady only screenings despite all the controversy and everything.
Pause there. My ultimate thing is, I think this is where we landed, is like, who cares? Right? It was a little bit of a gimmick.
That's not why we landed, and don't interrupt me.
I meant originally, not now. But okay, me personally, I'm like, it's their movie theater. They can do what they want. It's a little bit of a gimmick, but why not? Let them do what they want.
You don't speak for us.
I didn't say I did. I said it was my opinion.
Continue,
Charles McFall, everyone, former friend of the show.
Filthy casual acquaintance of the show.
So it's in the news again right now because now there is a pending lawsuit against Alamo Drafthouse on the fact that they did these female-only screenings. And I guess technically in both New York and I believe Texas as well, I could be wrong about the Texas part.
I think it's Austin specifically.
Austin, yeah, the city of Austin itself. Yeah. These screenings were actually illegal because of anti-discrimination laws. I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh when I say that. And so it's a whole big thing again, and the argument has been reopened, and some people are very much like, I don't get it. This is BS. Not to belittle one side of the argument over another. Some people are like Charles, where they're like, who cares?
Laws are laws, and for a reason. And in this case, particularly, it feels like it's a law that backfires because it was initially about white men, honestly, discriminating against everybody who wasn't white men. But in the real world, did you really lose something by not being able to go see Wonder Woman at Alamo Drafthouse at that theater at that time?
Well,
but that's a slippery slope there, Charles, because did people really lose anything by not being able to drink at that water fountain at that particular time? Yeah, they lost a little thing called equality, they weren't put at the same level.
We're equating with men watching Wonder Woman to segregation.
That's what it is. Talking about a degree of that. That's exactly what it is.
By definition, it is segregation.
And that was my entire problem with this thing, is you don't fight discrimination with discrimination.
Precisely. That's also where I come in on the argument.
Well, I never thought they were honestly fighting discrimination. I thought they were being gimmicky because it's hero movie.
Well, they were being gimmicky, which is why I think some people are going to dump on Alamo Drafthouse, because it was like, oh, this was obviously like you knew that this was going to get attention.
Yeah.
It would obviously bring you business and everything, but like a lot of the arguments defending the idea of a female-only screening was, well, we'd be more comfortable that way. Mm-hmm. And I found that really kind of like alarming, because I'm like, that's the same argument that white men made about, you know, those coloreds drinking from their water fountains, mm-hmm. or going to their schools, or like, because, oh, we'd be much more comfortable if those people weren't mm-hmm. doing the things that we're doing the same, you know what I mean? And I think, and I agree with what Chris said, absolutely. I don't think you can fight discrimination and sexism, racism, any of these things by overcompensating to the degree where you discriminate against the group in privilege. In this case, I think, you know, Alamo Drafthouse basically brought this on themselves, you know? And who knows if this is going to go through. They did offer
to... And they should have checked the law to start with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely... Yeah. I mean, people get caught with their pants down all the time as far as, like, weird local laws and stuff. But that law is sound. You know, that, mm-hmm. that law is there to protect people. You know what I mean? And in this case, it's like, it might seem a little frivolous to try to protect the, you know, the people from a place of privilege. And, you know, was anybody really negatively affected by it? In theory, like in practicality, minimally, because there were other screenings available. And, you know, I mean, they could still go see the film. They just couldn't go into that particular screening at that particular moment. But it's the message that you're sending. Yeah. And I think that's why people are digging in on it. And it's definitely a complicated issue. Chris, I feel like you have some more to say.
Well, and I think for me, the problem is you forget about, let's say, that single father that wants to be able to empower his daughter and take her to that females only screening, but he can't. For whatever reason, mom's not there, but he can't act as that and take his daughter to something that maybe he supports and thinks, yeah, that's a great idea, but he can't because he's got some extra meat between his legs. Not only that, but they could have handled it in a different way that I think would have saved them. They could have gotten together with local women's groups and said, hey, we're going to go ahead and give you the opportunity to rent the theater from us, mm-hmm. waive the cost of that, and you can put on a Wonder Woman event as you see fit.
Yep.
And it could have been handled that way. And whether it came out the same outcome, whether it was women's only screenings or whatever, because I was a little taken aback, I think, too, at the We Feel Comfortable argument, because it was all about being able to dress up and go in costume and you see that at cons all the time. The people that are going to dress up and go already are comfortable doing it, because it's not just a gender. There's not just that gender gap in there as far as dressing up in costume. There's also just being comfortable with letting your geek flag fly. Mm-hmm. And if you're comfortable to do it, you're already going to own it. And that's not to say that there aren't those out there that don't feel extra comfortable when it's a female only audience. I don't want to disregard their point or their feelings. But I really feel like they lost the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't normally advocate finding loopholes to get around laws, but you know, this sounds exactly like the kind of thing that might be the goal of a certain organization or a club, which is totally legal. I mean, companies rent theaters all the time for private screenings, you know, or companies and organizations, clubs, you name it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nonprofits and profit alike can get a theater for a screening and it's just us, you know what I mean?
Okay, so with Disney film, I know that's a DC, so I'm not sure how it would have been controlled. I know from the Disney side of things, they actually do not allow that for like the first 2 or 3 weeks.
So while
it's technically available, you wouldn't get that opening weekend traction. And that's not what they were doing. I mean, it wasn't a group doing it either. I mean, it was the draft house themselves. I mean, it's bad publicity stunt backfiring.
The thing I find really interesting is Alamo Drafthouse's settlement offer is to send a DVD of the movie to all the
members. I was thinking that should be the settlement offer. It's like, I'm sorry.
And then in the Reddit thread that I first read, some people were like, DVD? You cheapskates? At least make it a Blu-ray, man.
Right.
I don't think it's about being able to see the movie, you know, because obviously there are other screenings. I don't think it was about getting a DVD or anything like that. I think it's really about, you know, it's about taking a moral stand. And I respect people who might disagree with the perspective that Chris and I seem to share on this. But that is the position that we take. And Charles, it sounds like you might have a slightly different perspective on things. I would just, for me, I would emphasize that you don't solve discrimination and you don't get people on your side for trying to be inclusive and respectful of each other by excluding. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, that's how you get people, that's how you get bigots, or even people who are, you know, maybe a little bigoted, but not necessarily hardcore, like, card-toting bigots, to dig in, because they feel assaulted. And it's something that kind of came up in politics, you know, in the last fall with the election cycle, is some people voted the way they did because they felt like their way of life and their perspective was just attacked. So rather than really be deeply introspective about the issues at hand or anything like that, they just dug in. And they dug in with their allies, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important that, you know, the best way to solve a lot of these problems is to not exclude people. Because you're asking for a battle, too. That's the other thing. You're drawing a line in the sand, and you're like, hey, let's fight this out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Once marginalization becomes a tit-for-tat, then you can never truly come together.
And here's the thing. I don't necessarily disagree with you. Just what I see is, okay, let's look at the two issues here. If you're going, they are discriminating, and this is setting our society back by decades because they're discriminating against the ones who used to discriminate. No, they weren't discriminating. They were stupidly trying to do a gimmick, as all companies try to do gimmicks, to get people in. To me, that whole women-only screening is akin to having the radio station come out and give away T-shirts and free tickets, and it was a gimmick.
Are you trying to say that Alamo Drafthouse was exploiting a social issue for profit?
I'm trying to say that Alamo Drafthouse, I don't know, maybe. I don't think discrimination plays into it, is what I'm saying. I think they were trying to say, hey, I think they were ignorant to what a movie audience wants. And I said that, I felt that when they said it. It's like, hey, it's a woman in a hero skirt. Why don't women come and pay this money to see it? As opposed to going like the rest of the, well, maybe not the rest of the world, but like we did, going, superhero, doesn't matter your gender, it's a superhero film, we're gonna go see it. And we loved how they did the movie. When we talked about it, even afterwards, after you guys got to see it, we didn't harp on, finally a female superhero. We were like, no, it's a great movie, this is how DC movies should be done, blah blah blah. And I think this whole lawsuit is not about discrimination either. It's about somebody going, I can exploit this issue myself, sue them, and maybe get some money out of it. Further gender equality at all.
The lawsuit's not asking for a lot of money. It's definitely a moral stand.
Yeah,
like it amounts to a few thousand dollars.
But it won't be a moral stand. It won't get you anywhere. It will not further the conversation of gender equality, because them doing it really wasn't about gender equality or disequality. It was a gimmick. And you suing them to make a moral stand is you going, hey, that's not right. And what does it do to help anybody? What does it do to actually help anybody?
I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that people said the same thing about sit-ins and boycotts and any number of...
I have a hard time seeing the similarities, honestly, because of what history says was actually going on at the time and how dangerous it was to actually do a sit-in and change the conversation versus a lawsuit in a country that does frivolous law. I'm not saying it's frivolous necessarily, but in a country that is lawsuit happy, let's put it that way, and we sue about... People are suing Niantic because things went wrong at Pokemon Go Fest.
I mean,
that's dumb. It's dumb. I made the analogy, you go to a Metallica concert and they have a bad day and they play crappy songs. You don't sue them. You just go, F Metallica, they had a bad night.
A little bit different.
I hate you guys so much sometimes.
That was a little bit different than Metallica having a bad night. That was Metallica coming on stage like 4 hours after they were supposed to being on, giving you like three songs, and they were covers of some other band. promising you that if you come back in 2 hours, or telling you that the show's over, and then an hour later telling you to come back and we'll play another song, and then you get there, and it's like Fuel.
Free
and that's
Bird.
It. You're going to get your money back for that. But Charles, I guess my thing is it, whether you, the intent is not of import here. Was there discrimination by saying that only women could go to these screenings? Yes or no? Is that not inherently discriminatory by saying only one group can go? regardless of the intent.
He really doesn't.
There's no Batman. God damn it.
No, okay. This is where I get frustrated. Not necessarily at you, but at the whole of how our society handles this conversation. Because again, our conversation on the show about it, I don't think it's going to change anything. I don't think it's going to change minds or affect people in the future. I think it's right that we're talking about it. But yeah, on paper, if you say one group can go and other groups can't, that is discriminatory. When you say Boy Scouts can go on a camping trip, but if you're not, I'm not talking about sex, I'm just talking about Boy Scouts, a group, can go on a camping trip, but you can't because you're not in the Boy Scouts, that's discriminatory. But does everybody have to be in everything? I mean, with the Boy Scout analogy, join the Boy Scouts. With this analogy, okay, you can't go to the 7 o'clock showing in Theater 1, but maybe you can go to the 7 o'clock showing in Theater 3, jackass.
Yeah, but the Boy Scouts aren't saying that people can't go camping this weekend. They're saying,
I don't like the Boy Scouts. I do not endorse the Boy Scouts. I'm saying they got a lot of damn issues. Right. It's just the first thing that popped in my mind.
The difference is they're not saying that you can't go camping this weekend. They're saying you can't go with us this weekend. And that's their organization. That's their group. That's not going to a public place. That's not a public place saying this group of people can't use us.
Kind of going back to what Clot said about groups renting it out, a public place can say we're renting it out for a private party.
Right. Well, yeah. That's what I said.
Yeah. But that private party can be all women. I mean, and I don't know.
It can. It absolutely can. Yeah. I mean, that's.
You're catching up from 10 minutes ago. I love you so much.
My brain is so frustrated with all this. It's because we're talking about the wrong damn thing. And that's the problem, is they'll get a lawsuit, there'll be some kind of settlement, and it'll go away. And whose life did it change? Whose life did it hurt that you couldn't go to the Alamo Draft House? Did it hurt gender equality? I would say, personally, I'm going to stand on no. It didn't hurt gender equality. Does the lawsuit help it? I'm still going to stand on no, it doesn't help gender equality. What helps gender equality is when you see some jackass telling a lady she can't. I've had this happen at the local mechanic shop, treat my wife differently because she didn't have a penis. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, seriously? We're not doing business with you assholes anymore. Right. After I ringed them out and told them what I did.
Would treat you differently if you had a penis. They wouldn't let you in this particular screening and a couple others.
Yeah. And I guess, but what my warning to you would be
is then?
But Charles, to me, that my warning to you would be, it's those small incremental steps that nobody notices that over time add up, and that's what you have to watch out for. Like, I'm not saying that this would add up,
those blacks drinking out of our water supply is going to sneak up on us. You gotta watch out.
Yes.
Well, I mean, when actions matter, and so when something like this is allowed to go unchecked, it starts to become okay, right? So the fact that there's just controversy around this alone means that Alamo Drafthouse isn't, like, when Black Panther comes out, do you think Alamo Drafthouse is going to try to do a blacks only screening? You know, I mean,
think it'd be stupid. I don't think it'd be, I but still don't get on the bandwagon of discriminatory going, no, you're just stupid. But this is still but isn't, is this isn't a no whites allowed. It's just blown up and going in the wrong direction.
It is. No men allowed, though. Like, that's the thing, is it is discriminatory by the textbook definition of the word. It's exclusionary. It's saying only this one group can go. You know what I mean? And it's not the same question of scale. Obviously, institutional racism and sexism and stuff is a huge issue, and people, it's not just the one individual, like, not being able to drink out of a particular water fountain in the past isn't what contributed to the weight that the entire people of color community had to deal with. It was the fact that it was that and hundreds of other examples of things that they couldn't do, places they couldn't go, you know, services they couldn't use, all that kind of stuff. The fact that they'd walk into a business and they'd be refused service because of the color of their skin, you know, and it occurs with religion and sexual orientation. Like, obviously, yeah, it's different groups are oppressed in different ways, obviously, and to different levels. But the point is that, like, you can't solve that by beginning that cycle anew with a different group. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even if that group is currently pretty well privileged.
I honestly, I'm going to leave it here and you guys can wrap up your conversation about it, whatever. I think it's ridiculous to play the slippery slope card on a movie theater because it's just damn ridiculous. This whole thing is just blowing my mind how stupid it is that we as a society are getting our panties in a bunch on either side of this story when it's a non-story.
Let's not pretend like this is a huge issue. There is controversy about it, but it's, you know, a relatively small portion of the population is going to even be aware of it. It's going to be moviegoers and people who care about social issues. That's whose radar it's probably going to hit the most, you know? I think we've fleshed this argument out pretty well. You know, folks at home, if you have a stance on this whole thing, feel free to write in. And if you keep it constructive and we can actually read it on air, maybe we will next week.
I think we broke Charles.
Yeah, we do.
This is why I do Rock Out of Podcasting, to get out there and just try to change the conversation because it's yeah, let's move on. I'm just I need a drink now. Oh, so I get to move on. Okay, fine.
The next article is Chris.
Okay, so we're going to talk about what we think personally of what's coming up. But yeah, man, what is going on within humans? It seems to every step they take, they break the internet with the backlash.
Yeah, so all right, so Inhumans, you know, just the history of this project, it every time there's another step, I'm kind of like you know, because we had announcement that you're gonna get Kree, and we have Sky and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then we get introduced to the Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's a lackluster introduction. Then you find out, okay, these are just a certain sect of Inhumans, and then we got the Kree, and we were all horribly disappointed with the Kree. So we're like, oh, how are the Inhumans going to translate? And then we find, and then there's talk of an Inhumans movie with Vin Diesel wanting to be Black Bolt, and we're all like, yeah, that'd be cool. Two guys in the Marvel Universe, that'll be awesome when the voice gets to meet the body.
That'd be so cool.
And so there were, you know, there were production things that made us have faith, and then there were end results that made us lose faith, mainly all that stuff that happened on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So then the movie project goes from an actual big screen Hollywood theater or Hollywood movie to an IMAX 90-minute episode, which is just like the first two or three episodes of the show put together into one with some extra footage. And actually, I think that's what it is. I think it's the first two episodes with an extra 10 minutes, bringing it to like the 90 minutes or whatever, and shown on an IMAX screen. Well, when you are making something for television, I was already apprehensive about it, and I think I said it on an episode, was when you're making something for the small screen, are those effects that you can afford going to translate well to IMAX? And the results that we've seen so far, I'm gonna have to say no, because they're barely passable for television. But anyway, so there's I want to say it was a week ago. When did I post that? A week ago? 2 weeks ago? There was an early. It wasn't a review, but it was somebody that had gotten to see a press screening, or gotten a press screener of the movie, and their reviews were locked down. They couldn't print their actual reviews for X amount of time before the movie was going to release, or before the IMAX release. And so they kind of gave like their initial thoughts on it, and they were not good. And in the 4 hours that it took for me to post the link into the group chat and for one of you guys to see it, it disappeared.
Yeah, I saw that it disappeared. I did not get to see the link yet.
And it was really just that the show was not good. His initial thoughts were the effects were not good, the writing was not good, the acting was not good, just a resounding not good. So then at so I want to say it was on the 6th, sometime in early August, ABC Disney had their press conference, the Television Critics Association press tour, I believe it is. And Jeff Loeb, who's on the television creative side with Marvel Productions, he very tersely answered back to reporters that were asking about these initial bad reviews that it was getting. His quote, I've got two quotes from him. He says, "I can tell you that it was written on the material that you were given, that show that you have seen is not the finished product," Loeb said when asked whether the series had turned out as he had hoped. "If you're asking me whether or not it was done, it's not. So to be perfectly honest, I don't understand your question." And then when another reporter prefaced a question with the assertion that the quality of the episode shown to critics was not suitable to IMAX screens, Loeb said, "I think you're making an editorial statement, and I'm wondering what the question is." So, and other reports that I've read is that he was very standoffish. Not that this reads any other way than standoffish.
Yeah, I read a few of the articles as well and some of the quotes. And I mean, like, he would dodge questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the person writing the article wrote it in the sense that he kind of played stupid. Like, I'm not going to respond to a question I don't understand. And then they would, again, it's a written article. We weren't there. They could be skewing this. But it was, then they said their question was basically something simple like, what do you expect from the final product of Inhumans or something? And you know, something straightforward that any of us could theorize on. And he was like, I'm not going to answer if I don't understand the question. And it sounds like a bad day. It sounds like they had a bad day.
It does. And then his response was basically, "Get off my lawn." And that's a problem. The ABC Entertainment Apprentice.
Who was it that said that?
That Jeff Loeb. That's to me.
Oh yeah, Jeff Loeb.
Read.
He's paraphrasing. It's not.
But Jeff Loeb, not a friend of the show.
I wish he was. Channing Dungey, the ABC Entertainment president, he responded earlier in the day saying, "I think that the episodes that you guys have seen is still a bit of a work in progress. We are still a month away from final air, but I do feel like there's a great opportunity there as well." I know they answered specifics as to, like, Medusa's hair. I want to say maybe the director is the one that's answered specifics to, like, Medusa's hair from that original teaser trailer that we got, and everybody was complaining. I think the two big complaints were the costuming sucks and why didn't we get to see Medusa's hair move. Mm-hmm. And then we got was that SDCC or just before when we got the trailer where we finally got to see Medusa's hair move, and it didn't look great. Lockjaw up to was probably the best looking thing. And that wasn't great. And to me, this stuff that's made for the small screen, as good as the effects can be, and I would probably say the Flash has probably got the best effects of all the stuff on TV right now. I'm not watching that on IMAX. I would purposely skip that just so I did not lose. I did not have a lesser opinion of the Flash. And it's not to any fault of the effects people. It's they're working in the parameters that they have with the technology that they have, and that's not meant for an IMAX screening. I don't necessarily have the problem with them doing a 90-minute premiere episode in theaters. Don't make it IMAX.
I've never understood the whole theater preview thing. I remember back in the day when they first started doing this, it was like Monday Night Football. And my dad thought it was a great big deal to go watch football on the huge screen. Of course, you're talking about the 80s, you know, when I was a kid. And big screens were not in most homes. And while it was cool for the big screen and to have the popcorn, I was like, it's still the football game. So when they announced, we're going to do the first two episodes on IMAX, they did it with Doctor Who, I want to say 2 years ago. It was right around Dragon Con weekend, just like they're going to do the Inhumans at Dragon Con weekend. It was Doctor Who, the first two episodes were going to be in the theater. I'm like, I don't care. Why do I want to go pay $8-$10, whatever it's going to be, to go see this thing or more, plus popcorn and everything else, when I can just watch it when it comes on TV a week later? Just on the idea of going to the theater for a TV show, what do you guys stand? Where do you stand on that?
If it was something exceptional, like for example, Defenders is coming up, right? It's coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
If they were to do, come see the first two or three episodes of Defenders and we'll make a big spectacle of it or whatever, that I would be more like, okay, I'm open to that. Because we know that the everything that feeds into the Defenders is good. You know, well, three quarters of what feeds into the Defenders is really good. And so we know what we're getting. You know what I mean? A successful show like Game of Thrones, you know, like or you just mentioned Doctor Who, something that is established, we know what to expect. I'm fine with that because it's an experience.
There's no established fan base for Inhumans right now. There are people who might like Inhumans comic books or characters because they're in a lot of the games and stuff. But right now, there is no fan base for this show. You haven't established anything. So you take a huge risk by scheduling these theater previews. You further that risk by taking a television show that is not super high production quality thus far from what we've seen. And now you want to put it on IMAX, which is the premier format for showing film. You know what I mean? Like, that people who go to see IMAX stuff are going to nut over quality. You know what I mean? They're there to
see. It's
all
about graphics. I mean, when you hit IMAX, it's really about graphics.
Well, it's also about the sound and everything, too. It's a comprehensive experience. It's a big deal. It's for cinephiles and audiophiles who really care. You know what I mean? And you're exposing yourself to the harshest of criticism by pursuing that to amp something like this up. Further, I would lay the hammer down on Marvel over this right now and be like, you're half-assing this show. Everything you've showed us so far looks mediocre at best. You know what I mean? Like, Lockjaw looks cool. Everything else looks like trash. If I'm honest, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look CW level good. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been 50-50 with a lot of its effects. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's terrible, but it's mostly tolerable because you know what to expect. But this is Inhumans. This is a show about, you know, not mutants kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't do an X-Men TV show and have bad effects. Like, it would be a stupid idea. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're very clearly phoning this in. You haven't put the time and the money into it. And then for you to do this screening and to play stupid to the criticism, like, dude, you can't make the argument, well, we're 30 days away from live air. You have less than a month to fix this? That's horrible.
Yeah.
This should have been ready. This should have been done. Like, you should be showing us the final product. This is your big opportunity. I mean, that's the other thing, is you're doing a press screening.
Yeah.
That I understand, like, when they do press screenings of films and they do test screenings and everything, if they tweak some stuff, they do a little bit of editing, and then when the film comes out a couple weeks later, it's a little different. But this is like, you're saying that this looks like crap because it's not done. I have no reason to believe that this is going to look any better in a month. I mean, you know, and I haven't even seen it. I'm just going off the fact that, and these are professionals who are asking fair questions. I mean, I don't feel like anybody was baiting Loeb into, you know, just like,
right.
Nobody was just trolling him or anything like that. They were asking legitimate questions. You know what I mean? And it's absurd that you would respond that way. I understand that you got to spin. You know what I mean? You've always got to always be spinning and, you know, you got to deflect a little bit, but like, don't get salty and then try to cite, well, it's not ready. You know, you haven't seen the completed product. Well, then why did you show it to us?
Yeah, they're not what is that? The screening groups where you can get paid to watch a show, give your honest opinion, get out, and they'll do a whole bunch of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a screening group.
Right.
It's a press group.
And further, this isn't Bush League. You know, ooh, like you're not the CW, you're not even Freeform, well, which it's going to be on ABC proper, right? Yeah. You're even that, I don't think they should use an excuse. You are Marvel, owned by Disney, mm-hmm, part of the biggest, hottest property on the planet at this given moment. Your pedigree is the most successful film franchise of all time. You have access to infinite resources as a company. You know what I mean? Why are you doing anything that you're not putting yourself into fully? Now, I understand that you're not going to give it the same budget that you would give, you know, Infinity War. But come on. You're clearly cutting corners here. And I know that Marvel, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe in particular, its early beginnings, has been really highly praised for being able to pinch their pennies and tighten their belt early on. You know, that was the big thing with Perlmutter early on, is he was very strict about financing. Like, they did not overspend. They spent what they had to spend. You know what I mean? And that's how they salvaged this whole thing. That's how the MCU is as good as it is now, because they managed to pinch when they had to, and, you know, they were able to carve out and recover. but this is just trash. Like, this is the height of your franchise strength. And it's, you've shown with Netflix, for example, that your company can be involved in putting out incredible quality stuff, even if your recent offering was a little bit lackluster. You know what I mean? I realize I'm ranting here a little bit, but it's like, you can't argue all of this. This is unforgivable for me, honestly. Like, you clearly didn't, you amped this up to be something way more than you ever actually were prepared to make it be. And that's kind of a sin to me, you know what I mean?
It's the flip side of the Avengers. When the Avengers was coming out, they did a panel at SDCC, right, that the Nerdist hosted because they thought he would give them nerd cred, right? Mm-hmm. And you helped that crowd, win that crowd over. Everybody cheered for the stars that came out because some of them were, at the time, especially big faces. Now they're all big faces, but they were at least decently big faces, especially Robert Downey Jr. So the crowd goes nuts. But they were so trepidatious, right? They were so scared of, this could fail. We're putting all our eggs in one basket, and this could bomb. Nobody's done this before. And they took caution. And this is like the flip side of that going, well, look at us now. 10 years later, we can spike the ball in your face and you're going to love it. And that's not what won us over in the first place. And it's going to backfire. I'm with you. There is no, in fact, there might be an anti-fan club for Inhumans with how they treated Inhumans on S.H.I.E.L.D. It was just done badly all the way around. And that makes the show tenuous, right? I've been going, I watch it because it's Marvel, but I'm not excited about it, you know, and especially when I see that Black Bolt lands in Hawaii or something. I'm like, that's like the home of some CSI kind of crap, man. I don't know if I want to see Black Bolt in Hawaii, but let's see where you go with it. You got it. I think they need to treat every property with kid gloves like, this could fail. Let's put our heart into it and hope it lands with the fans. Mm-hmm. I kind of think that's the mistake they made with Iron Fist. Iron Fist was mediocre. It was not bad. It definitely had some great moments, but compared to everything else that had come out, it felt lazy is the word.
Oh,
it
yeah.
felt easy. Rushed. Maybe
it wasn't lazy per se in the fact that maybe they had the best intentions, but the way they booked it, like, for example, you know, Finn talking about how he was coming off another project and then he had like a week. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
That sounds like bad booking. You should have booked him, you know what I mean? You should have booked him ahead of time or something, or you should have pushed production back a little. And I realize we're talking about millions of dollars here when you're talking about something like that, like pushing production or whatever, but you got to get it right. And Iron Fist is a perfect example of when you rush something and you half-ass it, the repercussions are bad. People have lost a lot of faith in the Netflix shows. You know what I mean? Like, people have been like, because you also have to realize, like, in talking about the Netflix shows in particular, you know, you start with Daredevil pretty much universally hailed. Season 2, mostly hailed. Some people had their, you know, things that they didn't like so much. Mm-hmm. But Punisher really carries it.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones doesn't resonate with everybody. It's a certain type of story. It doesn't appeal to necessarily everyone. It was quality. It was really well done. But a lot of people just weren't into it. Same thing with Luke Cage. There's a lot of people who weren't into that experience. You know what I mean? It was still done well. It has its shortcomings. You know, and definitely, you know, I'm one of the first to point out that mid-season villain switch was a huge mistake because that show lost all its momentum mid-season and it really hurt that season. But the overall, what they were going for was quality, and that was very apparent. But then you get to Iron Fist and it's like, it's just tonally wrong through almost the whole thing. There's a lot of good in there though too. There's some great moments and there's a decent story, maybe not executed to the best, but it was half-assed, you know? And so you've diminished there's some people who are nervous about the Defenders. I'm confident, but I could be wrong. You know, a couple weeks from now, I could be eating crow right here on the air. You know what I mean? I could be like, well, they, you know, and that might be a sign of things changing at Marvel. Maybe they're not, you know, willing to bring the level of professionalism and execution that they were bringing before. Because I definitely feel that way with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That show has gone up and down a number of times. You know, sometimes it's really hit its stride and it's been awesome, and then other times it's been like, why am I still watching this? As a matter of fact, I didn't watch most of the most recent season. I think it's really important that you not do that right now, though. Like, this is a pretty pivotal, especially now that we know that they're looking to transition into the future of the MCU as well. We're looking at the next 2 years being the cap to the current era of the MCU. It'll be, you know, the end of this book, you know, this collection of stories, if you will. You want these shows to be in position to transition forward, or at least hold the gap while you prepare the next, you know, generation. So you want people, that's the whole point of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. originally, was like, the movies, we release 2 movies a year, but we want something for you to watch in between.
Yeah.
And we're going to tie it in. And then they didn't really follow through. You know what I mean? And so I just feel like they show such acumen and execution with the MCU. Even the films that aren't their best films are still great. You know what I mean? Overall, they're good. None of those movies are bad. With maybe the exception of arguing the first couple, you know, like the second Iron Man gets criticized a lot, the third Iron Man, you know, the first Hulk wasn't the best. But overall, the product, especially once they hit their stride and Avengers came out, everything from that era forward has been really solid, even if it's not your favorite. They need to capture that in their television shows, or just not do them at all. It's my very strong feelings on the matter.
Yeah, I've been feeling lately with the downturn of Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that maybe they should just stick to basically premium content, movies and Netflix. You know, it just felt like it's going that way. And frustrated, to say the least. But Chris, what do you got, man?
Well, I know that when I initially read that first article, when the author was giving his hot take on it, his watered down opinion, you know, he's talking about a press embargo, and I'm like, that is a play directly out of DCEU's book. That's exactly what they did with Suicide Squad. That's exactly what they've done with a few other projects. They're like, okay, yeah, you can see it, but don't you say a word about it until like a week before. And I don't know that we've seen Marvel do that yet, right? You know, because all their stuff always gets glowing reviews. So now I'm wondering how that works. If at the beginning of you know, they have them sign, you know, an embargo agreement and say, okay, we won't post our reviews until, you know, a week before this airs. And then if the screening goes great and there's like standing ovation or something or lots of applause at the end of that, they're like, hey, give those back, tear it up, you guys can post your reviews now. But then if it's a silent room, they're like, yeah, no, that's still in effect.
Yeah. You know, I've got a conspiracy theory for you guys. What if Marvel's actually good guy Greg? And they felt bad that DC is just struggling to get their movies off the ground. Like, you know what? We're going to take a hit for you guys. So we'll take a little heat off, give you some breathing room to get your movies right. It's just a TV show. It's throwaway. We'll take the hit. We're good guy Greg. But yeah, I think it'd work. I think it'd be fine.
What if they are a collective George Lucas and are about to become the victims of their own success?
Oh, my goodness.
You shut up, man. You shut up right
no,
now.
No, but I mean it. You know, like,
I know you do. That's why I hate it so much right this second. Because you got something there.
It's one of those things where, you know, the train only goes so far before it starts to run out of steam. You know what I mean? And you can't be perfect forever. Nobody has been. You know, there's been no television series, no movie franchise, nothing that has ever been perfect forever. Everything comes to an end, and a lot of times it comes to an end when quality starts to dip. Now, the best shows and the best, you know, franchises and everything have had the acumen to be like, we're starting to lose. Let's wrap things up and let's do it well. I feel like Breaking Bad really did this. You know what I mean? We're starting to lose a lot of steam. The story's getting very convoluted.
Mm-hmm,
You know, let's make our plan. We're going to do our 2 half seasons and release them over 2 years. We're going to finish. And they did. And they did a good job. I mean, I definitely didn't like the end of the series as much as I liked the beginning and most of the middle of the series. But they were losing their traction and they brought it to an end, which is a show, you know, something that a lot of other shows and a lot of other production companies could have learned from if it had only happened so sooner for like shows like Lost. And, you know,
I was going to bring up Lost. Yeah, that originally was supposed to be a 4, maybe 5 year arc specifically, like, you know, with a set beginning, middle and end. And then it was just going gangbusters, and ABC said, no, stretch it out. Mm-hmm. And, of course, JJ left after the second season anyway, which I think changed things. But well, sometimes, man, you just have to have that arc and say, damn the money. Because the money, it won't be the money that runs out before your fans do. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I enjoyed Lost, but a lot of people left that show halfway through.
Well, yeah, Lost is is the industry punchline, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to be Lost, do you? You don't want to be a show that starts off on all this mystery and amazing storytelling and then 3 years in just become a tired trope that everybody mocks, you know what I mean? It's like The Matrix. You know, bullet time became a meme. You know, in the early days of memes, it was like, you know, one movie did a really great job with awesome storytelling that also used really incredible, innovative special effects technology, and it looked unique and amazing. And then for the next 4 or 5 years, every freaking movie, action movie that came out tried to use bullet time in some way, shape, or form, and it was bad. Most of them were a joke. You know what I mean? It's like, there's got to be authenticity in your work, and you got to keep quality. And, you know, if you're not willing to do that, stop. Don't ruin your great properties, because that's Fantastic Four is a perfect example. The first two films, you know, the real films, let's not talk about the trash that they've put out to keep rights. I'm talking about the ones that they really put a lot of money and effort behind. The two films with Chris Evans and Jessica Alba. The first one was solid for its era. It doesn't really hold up, but it wasn't terrible. It just wasn't great. The second one, you know, the second one was kind of rough, and they butchered two beloved characters. And that's why I bring this up, because now that franchise is a joke, because they ruined Silver Surfer and they ruined Galactus for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you don't want to do that with Inhumans. You don't want to do that with any of these. These are all potential gold mines. You know, do you not want someone like Black Bolt to be the next Wolverine, you know, like for a whole new generation of people where he is this iconic character that everybody rallies behind because he's so freaking cool? And maybe Black Bolt's not the best example of the Wolverine factor, but like, you know what I mean? There's always characters that people gravitate to. And if you ruin them by putting them in crappy films or TV shows, it's really hard to salvage it. And I think that's what like Fox faces with Fantastic Four. Fanforstic was really... They're like, oh, we're going to try to reimagine this whole thing and salvage all of this. And it's like, this is even worse because there's no heart and soul of what was here to begin with in this. And people know it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We're having some deep topics today. This is either drink heavily or take this in small bits show today. but we're going to come back with some more interesting and hopefully fun stuff coming up after the ad break. And just so you know, Klotz and Wiz, I know you already know about this, but our fans, yeah, there's a show out there that thinks they're better than us. They call us out. They're trying to beef, and they just can't hang. Because while we bring you plenty of awesome, great new ways to find awesome things in your life by this little delivery mechanism called ads, they think that, you know, we're selling crap. And all they're doing is coming up with funny voices like, hey, I'm Joe from Boston. I want to, you know, anybody can make up a funny voice, right? Anybody can do that. We bring you quality new experiences every week with our ads. So you know what? Tell Bosch they can suck it. Stick around. Stay tuned for the break. We'll be back in just a minute. And we're back with a cease and desist letter from the lawyers of Bosch saying we cannot mention them anymore. but we got some really cool things to announce right now. Toy Power. Let's talk about this show, Toy Power, for a second. Chris, I believe you were the first to come across it in our group.
Yeah. A longtime friend of the show, Frank Allen, from the Helicarrier days, fellow MAA player. He did it real quiet on the sly. He didn't tell us, hey guys, I'm starting a podcast with some mates of mine, and it's all about toys and toy collecting. They run vintage through new stuff. They just did a lot of great coverage over SDCC news. These guys are dudes that I just want to talk shop with nonstop. I love this show. I'm really hoping that Botch doesn't listen to this episode and realize how much I'm I'm smitten with the Toy Power guys. I don't need them to be jealous and start beefing with the new kids on the block. But we have an important announcement about Toy Power drops.
Yeah, we were able to get everything lined up just right, and we're glad to announce that Toy Power is one of the newest shows on the Giant Size Team Up Network, and they're going to be doing a whole lot of great work with us. We think they fit very well with their style of talking about the toys. And what you said, right, Chris, is right. And I've never been a collector. I wouldn't normally just go out and find a show about toys. But these guys just do what we do on the network. It doesn't matter if you're a DC fan, a Marvel fan. Like us, we like to debate things. What's your favorite? They tell stories with such passion and heart from their childhood and current collecting days that even as a non-collector myself, I find it very interesting to hear them share their passion and their love of collecting. It's really cool, and we're very proud to have them on the network, and we're looking forward to doing some amazing, great things with them. So check that out. It is Toy Power, and you can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else. And pretty soon we'll have a link up on our website, GiantSizeTeamUp.com. We'll have that up this coming week so that you can just go there, click on it, and get right to their website, which I believe – I should have looked it up. I believe it's Toy Power – podcast.com, but we will definitely get that out there. Who really goes to the .com much anymore? You can find them on Facebook easy. You can find them in iTunes and Stitcher. Just go ahead and download it, subscribe. You're gonna love it. So this next thing, I actually found a story before anybody else. I was shocked and awed at this, but it came across my digital desk, and immediately I knew it was something we would talk about, and I threw it in the group. And I can't remember, I think it was Carl who actually was like resistant to this immediately. That meme or that GIF he found of the guy pouring the coffee in his lap and punching his screen was awesome. But Disney is officially pulling out of Netflix, mainly because they're afraid of having little Netflix babies. But, we'll see what happens.
Charles.
I missed Emmett. Oh, really? I haven't said anything to get him to respond that way in a while. So, Disney is, and I'm pretty sure we covered some rumors about this a while back where they were looking to maybe do their own streaming service where they had acquired. I know we talked about the news, at least amongst ourselves, if not on the show. We talked about the news of them acquiring that service, BAMTech, or at least. Because it made waves when they were making, because everything has to be public. When you finally get to make the offer, you have to do it publicly. I know we talked about them doing BAMTech. We theorized about them doing their own service. Then, of course, they announced Netflix deal through end of 2018, I think it is. Which, by the way, if you got Netflix, now's an awesome time in your life if you're a comic book fan, because all the great Marvel stuff's up there. If you got kids, a lot of great Disney films, the new stuff is up there. And, of course, we've talked about Defenders and everything else that's going on.
But not much longer.
Well, in another year or so. It's going to play out through maybe 2019. ESPN is going to launch first, if I understand this article, or the article I read. I didn't read this article because it keeps playing ads in my ear that you can't hear on the show, but I can hear it in my headphones and it distracts me. So what does this particular article say? Because what I read basically said that the contract is good through 2018. ESPN will launch sometime next year in their own streaming service, and then they'll possibly launch their Disney streaming service in 2019.
Yeah, I thought it was they were going to let it lapse in 2019. So
yeah, something like that. They're not going to break it. They're just going to let it run its course.
Yeah. Well, they're going to pull out. They're going to pull off. So 2018, I believe, is when they're supposed to launch. Kind of buzzing through right now. But 2019, they won't have their content on, was my understanding. And I think that's the year, because I think the original content was through 2020. So I think it's 2019 through 2020. They won't have
the new stuff, like whatever's going on new at that time.
No,
the new
I think they're going to pull everything.
Buy out the contract at that point?
Yep.
That kind of makes sense, because if you're ready to launch and run your own service, whatever's left on the contract time, because I'm sure it's prorated, it'd probably make more fiscal sense to go ahead and buy the contract out and launch your own service than it would just to let it run its course. Because, it's freaking Disney. They got the money. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not exactly upset about this. I'm actually kind of interested. One of the things my wife said was, she's like, Disney has its own streaming service. Like, no. Disney got on board very early on in the streaming game and made their live channels and a lot of their Disney teen and kid programming available, but that whole other division from their TV channel is their movies and, of course, the Marvel and everything else, Star Wars. That is not on their own service at all. You won't get any of that. Basically, you just get Disney Channel crap. It's all right. It's not crap, but it gets old. It gets so old fast.
I know the article that I was reading a couple days ago said they had launched one in the UK a few years ago. That was basically their beta for streaming. And originally it launched with I think it was close to a $13 equivalent per month. And that was somewhere between 2 and 4 years ago when that launched. And now it is down to like $6 a month. And you're talking like, what'd they say, 400 movies, 4,000 songs. Because you get in this streaming service that they have in the UK, either in the UK or the one that they're proposing, it's going to have all of the movies, all of the TV shows, access to all of their song library.
The sing-along. They put out all kind of sing-along DVDs that kids love.
Well, and I don't know if it's going to be that or like actual soundtrack. I don't know how that is.
Right. Gotcha.
But so the music library, as well as it's going to have some component of live stuff with the shows on the three channels. So
okay,
it sounds like a lot of bang for the buck if it's down to six bucks a month.
And I read that they're going to do their own content, much like Hulu and Netflix are doing their own content. Now, I read that they were going to basically make stuff for that streaming service. Honestly, I really don't see a downside. I'm not sure. You know, I'm going to throw this to Klaus because you and I have carried this. But Klaus, do you think that in the Netflix Marvel connection where they're making Daredevil, all that jazz, do you think it's still the Marvel Disney magic or that Netflix adds a special magic that would be lost if they take it to their own service?
Well, that's hard to say because we don't know who's, or at least I don't know who is pulling the most weight as far as actually getting the work done and the overall quality. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just financing from Netflix's side where they're like, you know, it's part of their whole deal or whatever? Or, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say. If Marvel is the one that's completely behind actually writing and develop, you know, and rolling out the show, then I don't see a functional issue with it being on a different service. I will say that Netflix's price plummeted after the announcement.
Yeah, their stock. Yeah.
Their stock, yeah. They took a huge dip, like bad. So coupling that with the story from last week, where we talked about how much debt they're in, it completely changes everything I was saying about last week. Because now it's like, now I would be really worried about the future of Netflix because this is going to pull a lot of eyes and revenue out of the picture for them. I don't see how Netflix can possibly fill that gap. That's such a huge disconnect for them.
I agree, but I think with the right work and maybe some restructuring, definitely. Restructuring the debt, paying off a lot of it as much as you can, because there's so many mom and pop is the wrong term, but I'm trying to convey small. There's so many off brand, if you will, streaming services now. I mean, Crackle. I consider Crackle an off brand streaming service. It just hasn't made the level that Netflix and Hulu has made. But I've seen Popcorn Flicks and Scream, a horror network, and I mean, there's all these niche and off brand streaming services. I think Netflix could survive it, but I think they'll plateau and maybe shrink a little bit.
And possibly get bought out.
Possibly get bought out. By Disney. Now Disney owns
Netflix. Disney, yeah.
That would be the dumbest thing ever. To pull out of the...
Not if it drops the price.
I mean, because they've got a lot of other good original content on that network that's not Disney related.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, that's all licensed. Like,
true.
Netflix themselves is not really creating very many original shows. They're creating a few, producing a few, but a lot of it is just they're sourcing it from somebody else, and they're licensing the distribution, and then they slap their Netflix original tag on it. You know what I mean? I honestly like I. This is really interesting. It's very complicated now with this in the picture, because there's a lot to be said about Netflix as a brand. The brand name, it's a Kleenex, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a yeah. Cheerios. It is a ubiquitous term for streaming services now. Everybody says Netflix. Even if they mean Hulu or Amazon half the time, they'll be like, oh yeah, Netflix and chill, all that stuff. You know what I mean? It's a meme. It's everything. So, you know, like, there's value in the brand no matter what, but losing the hottest, you know, production company on the planet and them splitting off into another service, it's going to pull dollars away. It absolutely.
Like
for you, you know, you mentioned what's great about Netflix for you is there's stuff for you, but there's a lot of stuff for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who make those decisions based on entertaining their kids. You know what I mean?
Right. Now I'm going to play, I don't know if devil's advocate is right, but I'm going to play the controversy card a little bit. Because people are blinded by Disney, right? And this announcement, if we take it at face value, what Chris read off is there'll be every movie, every blah, 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 all this other stuff. But Disney has been proven, their whole business model is to make things scarce. So I don't know what the actual year cycle is, but every so often, Snow White comes out of the vault and you can buy it. Now it's Blu-ray remastered, blah, blah, blah. It's not really changed, but you couldn't have bought it beforehand. And then it's on the shelves for, let's say, a year, and then it's gone. Get it now before it goes back into the vault. And you cannot buy a physical copy. I wonder how that's going to change, because that's been their model forever. I mean, as long as I can remember, that's been their model.
My honest opinion is that's a dead business model.
It was a crappy one to start with. But my question is, are they going to take things off their own service and make it unavailable? You know,
I don't think so, because that's how you get those. That's how you get the dollars. And then you can just scrap their direct marketing campaign on the hard copy movies.
One of the biggest problems Netflix had, say, like 3 years ago, was you would run out of stuff to watch, right? It was just like conventional TV. You'd be like, all right, I watched all the shows that I like to watch that are on just Netflix. Oh, let me go scroll through movies. And it'd be like one or two blockbuster movies and a bunch of garbage, like real trash. And, you know, there's some hidden gems in there. And, you know, they're hard to find, though. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until they started getting all of these shows, and they're good, you know what I mean? Like, so many of these shows are really crazy good. Once they started to do that, then it's like, well, now I almost always have something to watch. But part of that mix is having the allure of the Disney, the properties that they're producing, and also...
Well, I would also argue that the fact that they get it later helps them out. Like the CW stuff, right? This whole last season was all on CW. They pulled from Hulu, put it on CW app, and then 7-8 days after the finale, then it's on Netflix, and now I can binge it. And they do that with sci-fi. I would not have watched episode one of Wynonna Earp if it hadn't come across Netflix suggestions. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't think they die. I think maybe you're right, Chris. Maybe they've been in a good position to be bought out, but I think some version of Netflix absolutely would go on. But this would possibly set them back for a while. But at the same time, this could be the Wozniak. Well, okay, if this was the Wozniak job split, is Netflix? I guess Netflix is Wozniak, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're the Woz. Yeah.
And Woz did okay for himself, but he was no Disney or Steve Jobs, however you want to finish that analogy.
So real quick, I found the article that I read the other day, and it was from the Nerdist, and this was, so Disney Life is the app that's available in the UK. So it says, Disney Life is honestly one of the most unique streaming services that we've ever come across. Its main draw is obviously Disney's notoriously protected animated back catalog, you know, the one that they used to delay on VHS and only ever release in short bursts, and that even includes flicks that still haven't been released on Blu-ray, from Sleeping Beauty to The Princess and the Frog, Aladdin to Frozen, The Lion King to Beauty and the Beast. Disney Life has them all. Also includes Pixar movies and Marvel and Star Wars content, putting the service above most others. But it's the extras that makes Disney Life stand out. Along with the 400-plus movies, the app also includes over 6,000 Disney songs, 4,000 Disney TV episodes, 250 books, how-to animation videos, and live streaming of all three Disney channels. And that was at a price point originally of $12.97 when you convert, and now it's down to $6.48 a month.
I would definitely play Hulu prices, which is $12 a month for that. You know, and right now, see, here's the thing. With, and I honestly do like this on a separate front. I'm a fan of Netflix, man. They won my heart over Blockbuster. They won that war. I've been loyal to them, even when they got sued. And apparently, because I was a Netflix member from the get go, I was part of the class action lawsuit, whether I wanted to or not. I felt bad. I was like, I don't want to sue them. I thought everything they did was fine. I thought they lived up to everything they ever promised, and I've loved their business. But that being aside, I'm glad that Disney's breaking away from cable. Because right now, we have all the three Disney apps on our Roku box for the kids to watch. And as long as you have a cable login, which we do because of things, they can watch what you just said, partially what you just said. They can watch all the Disney shows that are on those three channels, which is Disney XD, Disney, and Disney Junior. And they can also watch what's live. They can also do that on their tablets as well through the apps. So this is a marriage, it sounds like, into one app of that and the version of Netflix that we know now, essentially, but Disney only. And I'm good with that.
And I think, in addition to, it says Bob Iger has also confirmed that the service will offer pay-to-view option on new content. So I don't know how new that content is.
Now, I wonder if that's going to be the voodoo part of it, right? Rent Doctor Strange now before it hits the shelves for $22.99. You don't rent it for that much. You buy it for that much. But ugh.
I wonder.
Wait, I'm sorry. Let me do a quick rant. Klaus, let me borrow your soapbox. Is that all right? I'm going to borrow your soapbox. I hope I won't break it, but I'm going to step on it for a second.
I mean, you haven't shut up for the last 20 minutes, so by all means.
By all means. Thank you. I appreciate you. Paul Klotz, friend of the show. Why the hell am I paying Blu-ray off-the-shelf prices for digital content to own it? Seriously.
I don't know. Why are you?
I'm not, but that's the prices they charge. Doctor Strange, own it for $22.99 on Vudu right now. Or go to freaking Target, because you know I hate Walmart. I ain't going to Walmart. Go to Amazon and order it for $22.99 and get the Blu-ray, the Vudu copy, and the DVD shareable copy.
Yeah. So again, why are you buying the digital for that price?
I mean, I guess the question is why they're offering it for that price. All right, Klaus, I'm sorry. I'm done. Go ahead.
Well,
look what he used your soapbox for.
Yeah, that's not how you soapbox properly. I'm going to have to soap it down and rinse it off. The industry argument for that pricing is that they don't want to devalue the physical products, because if they devalue the physical products, then retailers get hurt because people won't ever want to buy the physical products that have a similar or actually lower price. I have mixed feelings about that. I understand the argument that they're saying. I'm not sure that. I mean, it's a trade-off. You know what I mean? They do that because ultimately, like, I don't agree with anti-consumerist mentality as far as pricing goes. But I understand that they're trying to keep stores in the business of stocking films and TV shows, because more than anything else, like, ultimately, they don't care that much about how many they sell. They care about the fact that you see it all the time. They want you to bump into it. You know what I mean? That's advertising. It's awareness. You know, even if it's not like, even if it's something you don't necessarily watch all the time, you're still aware of their brand, and it's in association with other stuff, you know? So, like, when you walk by the display that's got Avengers on it, and it also has, you know, Batman Begins, or it has, you know, BVS on it, you'll go, oh, I like Avengers. Oh, hey, look at this other thing. You know what I mean? And you'll be aware. Mm-hmm. That's the whole, it's all like, it's thinly veiled, cooperative, cross marketing there, where everybody's patting each other on the back by being on the same shelves together. And to do that, they have to make it so that stores want to stock your stuff. It's frustrating. I agree with it. It's one of the big beefs that, the gaming community has, in particular with, like, not Disney, sorry. It's so easy to be, like, anti-consumerist things, Disney. in this case, I'm going to go to my other scapegoat, Nintendo. You know, Nintendo does the same thing. You know, stuff available through the store on the Wii U or the Switch or your DS or whatever is going to be full price almost always. They very rarely do any sales or anything. And they do that because they don't want to devalue the physical products, because they want retailers who carry the physical products to still be in business, in the business of selling their stuff. But I don't know that it's the best thing.
Well, and I think there's a difference, at least a slight difference, when you're talking movies to video games, in the fact that the extra content on movies that physical copies have that digitals don't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a cool plus, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, so that's a definite plus, where the physical copy for the foreseeable future will always have a plus over just getting the digital copy. Now, is it that hard to transpose those into? No. But for me, I go back and forth on the extras, because when I was younger, before I had kids and all this other media that I'm trying to consume, I was that extras guy. Like, I was watching the outtakes, the gag reels, when they're all talking about the movie as it's playing.
I once watched all the expanded features for Lord of the Rings trilogy, which actually runs longer than the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it does.
That's an endeavor, but it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. There's a little featurette like that on Man of Steel that was actually really interesting, because it showed all of the background work that went into, and I talked about this on the show before, but all the background work that went into Krypton and Kryptonians. They developed the whole culture and armor, and like all the stuff that you saw briefly for like the first 20 minutes at the most of Man of Steel. They really fleshed that crap out like it was Lord of the Rings or something else. Like, they really put a lot of time and effort into it, and I was like, why did you do that? Nobody cares. But it was really cool to see it. But yeah, physical media has those perks for the people who are into that stuff. But I feel like that group is small to begin with, and it's only dwindling from there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room is, do you want people to pirate your crap? Because a lot of this stuff is how you get people to pirate your crap. Depending on what the pricing is on this new Disney app. The piracy is the main reason why the vaulting system doesn't work anymore as well. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You've released it before. It's out there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I hate to be the dick who's like, ha ha, got you, but I do, you know? Whereas 20 years ago, when, you know, Alice in Wonderland or whatever came out, or, you know, Cinderella or whatever, it's like, oh, well, I can't really find that very easy on VHS, or when DVDs first started coming out, you know, oh, well, I don't have that in the digital format. The other thing is, I do think there's going to be a lot of, as time goes on, there's going to be a lot of format atrophy, where people are going to get tired of upgrading their collections every time a new format comes along.
Yeah.
And I think there's a little bit of that with Blu-ray, but the leap from DVD to Blu-ray is so monumental, though. People are like, okay, I'll buy the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. But luckily, prices have come down for that, too. I mean, I remember when Blu-ray first came out, they were $25, $30, and they almost never got discounted because they were expensive to make. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you know, there's bargain bins for Blu-ray. We knew that would happen eventually, but it's, you know, getting increasingly common.
But first, they had to get rid of that scourge of the red disc.
we don't speak of the dead disc.
Oh man, it does kill me, because I was going to make a statement of, I can see a difference between Blu-ray and DVD. I can see a difference between HDX and SDX on Vudu, which is how they list their standard def and their high def. I have not had the privilege of seeing ultra high def, so I don't know the difference there. Only because I haven't experienced it. But I do hate when my daddy, when he goes,
friend of the show.
Okay, I don't know. If you ever listened, he might not be a friend of the show. But when he stays there, go, I'd have to see him side by side to see a difference. So finally. I wasn't going to make it my mission to make him see the difference. I don't care. But finally, we happen to be in a Best Buy together, and there's a TV set up to show you the difference between HD, or DVD rather, and Blu-ray. And it's so freaking obvious the difference. He's like, I don't know. I kind of see it. I'm like, how did I ever come from you? How? How do we have the same G's? I do not understand this. But with all that being said, there are some things I'm okay with watching SD in. I like that it's a lower price. I don't necessarily have to have the most stunning, clear picture on every last thing I own. But damn, those digital prices are high. Mm-hmm. You know, I might as well just go buy the Blu-ray pack. And that's why I don't have a huge collection of movies, because to me it's just not cost effective. Dude, you know how many DVDs I donated when I moved? Mm-hmm. Bins on top of bins of them.
Well, how, you know, the other thing is, how often do you rewatch movies?
Not that many.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I really feel like anybody who's a big movie buff, there's going to be some classics that you're going to want to own physical copies of, particularly because some things are really hard to find later on down the road. I remember a few years back, a bunch of friends and I, we wanted to find some of the best Mel Brooks films. And that was kind of a pain in the ass because there weren't recent versions of a handful of them. So we couldn't just go to Best Buy or Walmart and find, you know, like History of the World Part 1 or, you know, High Anxiety or something. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And, you know, obviously, like, your Men in Tights are pretty readily available. And then your Monty Python, like, your Holy Grail is readily available. But, like, Life of Brian might be harder to find. That kind of stuff. You know, classic comedy stuff that is fantastic. And I want to own for the rest of my life because I do not care how many times I see those films. They're always great. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's also there's a handful of, like, you know, epic, you know, like, historical dramas or action films or stuff that I will always love. Even if they age into, like, the first Conan movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I'll watch that movie until the day I die. It's cheesy. It's hokey. It doesn't look great all the time, but it's part of my life. You know, it's part of my childhood. It shaped who I am, partially. I mean, I don't live my whole life by it or anything, but, you know. Or Big Lebowski. Big Lebowski is another example of a movie I love that is, like, such a snapshot of an era.
Yeah.
And you can't dress it up anymore. You know, you can put it on every HD format under the sun. You know, it's never going to look much better than it
did. Oh, no. They want it to look that way. Because I went to a re-screening of it 2 years ago to the Big Lebowski, and they were upset they couldn't get the 35mm version. They only got the digital version.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that. It's a snapshot of that time. I love it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So it's like, but there are some things, and that's just some of my personal picks. That you want to own because you never know if it's going to be available on a streaming service. You never know when so-and-so is going to go under. You never know when the licensing might be up between a studio and whoever, you know what I mean? There's all kinds, you know, that's another great example. There's all kinds of things that are caught in, like, limbo that can't get DVDs or whatever made sometimes because of licensing issues, you know? So it's, sometimes you got to pull the trigger and own something. But you don't need to own, you know, like, I'm going to break your heart, Charles, but I have no desire to own all the Transformer movies.
Oh, that's it. I get that. You're a filthy casual. It's okay.
But, and I was going to say, like, for me, I've got a few of those movies that it's not that way. Because, like, Tombstone. I haven't owned a copy of Tombstone since it was on VHS.
I'll watch it when it comes on, though.
Exactly. Like a moth to a flame. I don't care where that movie is in the cycle. The channel doesn't change every time it's on.
Right. Yeah. Guilty pleasure, honestly. And I do feel guilty about it because it's a crap movie. Fast and the Furious 2. If it's on TV, I will watch the crap out of it. But I still think it's one of the worst Furious movies they made.
You're just happy because it's got a guy with an accent you recognize.
But I will say, let's do that. I like where Cross took that. Let's do that to wrap out the show. Your faves that you'll own. Just one or two. Mine's Tommy Boy. Dude, that comedy just rocked my world when it came out. Love that movie. Quote most of the lines on it. Made my kids watch it. I will always own a copy of Tommy Boy. I'll always own a copy of, I forget the movie could get mixed up with so many stupid movies. The Relic. I will always keep a copy. It's a B movie. It's not really a B movie. It tried to be an A-list movie in the time of monster films were resurrecting in the 90s. But I just love how that story is told. I wouldn't say it's a great movie.
That's the one in the museum, right?
Yeah, that's the one in the Natural History Museum.
That movie was really good for its time.
Yeah, I will always own that. It's my go-to flick. And, of course, as we know from MAA, I actually don't own a single copy of Roadhouse, but I watch the crap out of that every time it comes on, too. What about you, Chris? What are your ownables?
Clerks 1 and 2.
That's it? That's extended?
Well, I mean, I got more, but those are the only ones that consistently, every time a new format's come out, I'll pick up without a doubt.
Yeah, I won't do all the new formats. As long as I have a player that will play it, I have a copy. I do want digital copies of those movies. And that's why I like digital, because theoretically, while I know it, nothing is ever permanent, and at some point, Vudu or Ultraviolet or any of the other services could go out of business, I would have to buy a copy of whatever the new thing is out. But I theoretically, we could go through DVD, Blu-ray, Purple Ray, Orange Ray, and you know, before digital was like, yeah, we can't keep up. It's like, no, it's digital. It's just there. You know what I'm saying? And I don't have to move it when I move my house either. And I actually do watch it, unlike Phil, who won't watch crap but owns everything in the world.
And that's what I was going to say, is that's your fallback, is you can always check things out from the Phil library. You're not allowed to open it. It's still going to be mint in box, but you can check it out and say, hey, I've got access.
Truth be told, that's what landed them on the network. Is it's an okay show, but the fact that he has every movie ever made that we could get our hands on, you're on the network.
Cool. We probably should have worked that into the contract, you know, just like, so we have permanent access to your library.
And it's weird that Killer Clowns from Outer Space is the only one that he's ever opened. Like, I'm not saying I don't like that movie. I'm just saying that's a weird choice.
God, it's been forever since I watched that. Every time I hear that title, it makes me think of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, even though they're nothing alike, as far as I know. God, Attack of the Killer, my dad made me watch that when I was a kid. And I was like, even then, and you know me, I love goofy stuff, right? I love the Transformers. And I can admit, it's a goofy movie. It's really not Emmy nominated at all. But I, even as a kid, I watched that and went, really, Dad? This is what you think is funny? I don't, okay. I'm going to move on now. I think puberty
Troll
just hit.
Troll 2. I watched Troll 2 as a kid in the wild.
Neil Bogg. Love it.
Yeah. So Troll 2 is, Charles, I don't know if you know this. I know Chris does. It's legendary as being possibly the worst film. Like the
I
worst
thought Leprechaun like... was.
No, Troll 2.
Yeah. Okay.
The only thing better than Troll 2 is that documentary, but sorry, Paul, go ahead.
I saw Troll 2 as a kid and it scared the freaking crap out of me because I was young. But yeah, like that movie is so bad. So bad. I want to own it actually. Like now that I think about it, I don't own it and I want to own it because it's like, it's one of those movies that's so bad that people love it because it's so bad.
Wow. Fair enough. Yeah.
Oh my God, they're eating her! That's probably not exactly how the line was delivered, but it's legendary.
You probably delivered it better from what you're saying.
Yeah. So, it's really crazy. Like, there's some great little hidden gems like that out there that are, sometimes it's worth owning just for the lull.
Yeah. There's your quote of the night. Sometimes it's just worth owning just for the lull. Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to talk about one of our favorite shows on the network. That would be, we talked about it, Toy Power. They're new, so of course they're the shiny favorites. Go check out Toy Power, Giant Size Team Up Network. We are having a lot of fun over here growing the network, having great shows, being a family. It's a lot of fun. And if you like BTP, you're probably going to like a number of other shows. And vice versa. If you like the other shows, there's going to be a lot of crossover as far as what you like and everything else. So check out everything. It's amazing and fun. I love this journey that we're on and what we're doing with this company. Find our show, Breaking the Panel, on iTunes and on GiantSizeTeamUp.com, Patreon.com/Breaking the Panel. And you can email the show btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, @giantsizeteamup.com. And if you'd like your voice on the show, go to giantsizeteamup.com/breaking the panel. Speak pipe tab is right there on the right hand side of the screen. 90 seconds, give us your best work and we'll put it on the air. I think that's it. Klotz, you got anything left in you, sir?
No.
All right, fair enough. Tune in next week to hear Christopher Wisdom say,
remember, Paul, it's just a game.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.